Thank you, Beth. Thank you for being here. I'll be talking today about the innovative technologies the Innovation Lab is implementing in Bangladesh to enhance the availability of nutritious foods. An overview of the project. This is a project led by the Nutrition Innovation Lab of Tufts, and we're working in southern Bangladesh with 9 local communities where we're testing 3 innovative technologies. Namely, the technologies are the UC Davis chimney dryer that's used for improved solar drying of fish and horticultural crops, the coolbox-controlled cold rooms for fish and horticultural crop storage, as well as the floating gardens. We're aiming to improve horticulture, aquaculture productivity, and generally value chains. I'm going to start with the UC Davis chimney dryer. I'll explain what the technology is and how it works. And a little background information. Drying is a very old preservation technique. Naturally, grains and pulses dry as their seeds mature. Then when they're properly dried, they can last for a long time when stored at appropriate conditions. Meat, fruits, fish, and some vegetables have been dried historically as a way to preserve them out of season. There's many different drying methods that vary from very simple to very sophisticated. Some of them are drying in the open air, on trays, or in covered solar dryers, as well as using heated dryers, which require electricity or gas. Freeze dryers are also used for some crops. As we know, fresh fruits and vegetables, as well as meat, are comprised by 85 to 95% of water. The drying pretty much is the rate of water removal, and it depends on the difference between the relative humidity between the inside of the product, which is saturated, and the outside air. The easiest way to reduce the humidity of the outside air is to heat it. And we can achieve this heating by using electric or fuel-based heaters, which cost money. Or we can use something that's free out there, which is solar energy. Another principle is that drying is faster if the moisture-laden air on the surface of the product is removed quickly by dry air moving past the product. And that's what we're trying to enhance by this dryer. So here's two pictures of our dryers. One is in Bangladesh on the left and one in Davis, California on the right. And I'm going to talk to you about the way this dryer works. Here you see a depiction of the dryer. We have a long table which is covered by dark plastic and a 2-meter-long chimney which is covered by clear plastic. The product is placed here on trays, as you can see, and then the clear plastic is draped over the product to ensure that the air is heated. So the way it works is that as air enters from the front of the dryer, it gets heated up and rises. There's a window opening right here on the chimney. The air escapes through from the table through the chimney to the atmosphere, creating a chimney effect which draws dry air from the atmosphere, which gets heated up, takes humidity off the product, and goes to the atmosphere. Here's an example of how our drying trays look. They're built by wood, 60 by 60 centimeters, and we use plastic or food-grade metal mesh. We usually stack the trays double high, and we use a pole to create that concave. Here's a cross-section of the dryer. This is a black polyethylene-covered table. We use wooden blocks to hold the trays. The product comes on trays, double-stacked. Then a batten is used to support the pole. The pole is used to prevent ponding of water, and the clear plastic is placed on top. We secure the clear plastic with 2 poles on the ground so that it's nice and tight. Here is Michael Reed, who was one of the inventors of this dryer, placing product on the dryer. Here is him again, draping the plastic film over the product and the table. And we're using 2 blocks of wood here to secure the plastic to the dryer. Here's a picture of one of our interventions in Bangladesh with families, women and children, drying their products. I'm going to talk a little bit about the economics of the dryer. I got this data from 2012 from Jim Thompson. They're a little old, but they haven't changed much. On the left, you can see the data, the cost of, for the chimney dryer that I talked earlier. And on the right, you can see the cost for the cabinet dryer that's been promoted from FAO for years now. As you can see on the first line, the dryer in 2012, the chimney dryer could be built with $40 versus $60 for the cabinet dryer. The fruit capacity, however, of the dryer is double. The chimney dryer has twice as much fruit capacity compared to the cabinet dryer. Also, the time to dry fruit at, to 10% moisture content at 11-hour days that we have in California was only 2 for the chimney dryer and 5.5 days for the cabinet dryer. So when we cranked the numbers, we found out that the cost per drying capacity was about $7 per kilogram day for the chimney dryer versus $27 for the cabinet dryer. Also, we measured the temperature leaving the dryer compared to the ambient, and there was a 15-degree Celsius difference in the temperature of the air coming out of the chimney dryer versus only 9 degrees for the cabinet dryer. Also, the speed of the air moving past the product was 6 times higher for the chimney dryer compared to the traditional cabinet dryer. So here's a little video. We built a dryer in Davis a few days ago, and I'm going to show you real quickly how it works. We're building here the table that we're covering with black plastic. Then we are building the chimney that we're covering with clear plastic, and we're putting the pieces together. We're securing them. You'll see in a few seconds. And then we're placing the products on trays. The pole is placed, the clear plastic is placed, and that's it. So what are the advantages of the dryer, of this chimney dryer? It's low cost, it can achieve higher drying speeds, it works under unfavorable weather conditions, and it has versatile uses. It can be used for fish or fruits or vegetables. You can use local materials to build this dryer. You can use bamboo or even plastic, if plastic is cheaper than wood. It does not require any electricity or any expensive tools. It can be moved if there is a flood or during the rainy season. It protects the product from sudden rains, and animals don't have any access to the product because it's covered, and you can close the opening using a mesh. Also, flies cannot reach the product since it gets too hot and the smell comes out of the chimney, so they don't know where the smell is coming from. They can't reach it. I'm going to switch gears and talk about the CoolBot Cold Room. CoolBot is a device that is being marketed and produced by a company called Storied Cold, based in the U.S. And a little background about cooling, which is the most effective way to reduce food losses, since it reduces the rate of respiration and deterioration of fruits and vegetables, as well as water loss. The growth of fungi and bacteria is also reduced, and by having an efficient cooling system, we can allow farmers to consolidate their product and sell it later, making profit based on the changes in market price. So in the U.S. and the developed world, we use a mechanical refrigeration, which is very efficient. However, it's very expensive. So it's out of question for all smallholder farmers in the developing world. So how does the CoolBot device work? We're using the CoolBot, which is about $300 to purchase, and a household air conditioner. We're attaching the air conditioner thermostat with the CoolBot heater, which comes out of the CoolBot device, and then we stick in a frost sensor in the fins of the air conditioner. The way the machine works is that it heats the air conditioner thermostat, tricking the unit to work longer, and it can drop the temperature down to 34 to 35 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 2 to 3 degrees Celsius. A household air conditioner normally cannot go below 60 degrees Fahrenheit. But by using a CoolBot, we override this temperature setting, and we're dropping the temperature down to 2 or 3 degrees Celsius. So here's an example. We're using an aluminum foil, and we're attaching the heater to the temperature sensor of the air conditioner. We're setting the temperature here that we want our room to be set at. And the CoolBot will be giving an order to the heater to let the unit work as long as it needs for the temperature to go down to the degrees, to 4 degrees, for example, here. Here's an example in Bangladesh, how we built our cold rooms. We used polyurethane foam panels that were prefabricated for us. They came on a truck, and we had built a concrete slab. We assembled them together using a professional crew, and we had the room finished in less than a day. The room was sealed, and the door was placed, and then in the very end, we placed a split unit here, an air conditioner split unit. We removed all the plastic, and then we added the CoolBot device. According to our experience in Bangladesh, some of the issues we faced that construction can take a lot of time. Many times the contractors are not very reliable, so you need to find new companies to work with, and this can take time. Also, connecting to the grid electricity network is a big hurdle. Often the rural board, electrification board, delays the process and can take up to a year to get electricity connection in these cold rooms. Also, frequent load shedding problems demand a generator backup. And we found out that you can use the cold rooms for long-term storage. A previous project with potatoes proved that you can store crops for 3 or 6 months or even longer. However, farmers don't really want that for fruits and vegetables. They want their crop to be sold quickly, so they have money to buy seeds for their new crop. So let's talk about the cost in Bangladesh. It's about $400 to build a concrete slab, then about $5,000 to buy a very good quality of polyurethane foam panel, $800 to about $1,000 for a good AC unit, $550 for a generator, and about $250 to $600 for the electricity connection. The cost of the electricity, the power, is about $300 to $400 a year, and this is not much compared to, if you compare it to commercial refrigeration systems. So I'm going to give a quick example here from 3 years, 2013 to 2015, of a CERT wholesale market price in Bangladesh. As you can tell, from January all the way to April, the price is very low. It's about 15 taka per kilogram, which is about 20 cents, 25 cents of the US dollar. After that, the price goes really high because the product is not available in the market. It has to be imported or it had to be stored somewhere. So we cranked up the numbers and we ran this example. You can fit up to 8 tons of carrot in a CoolBot cold room. If you buy the product at 15 taka per kilogram in April and you store it for 3 months, the price after storage would be about 40 to 50 taka per kilogram. Let's say 40 taka for this example. We're having a gross profit of 25 taka per kilogram, which is about 200,000 BDT. If we include the cost of the CoolBot cold room, depreciation for 5 years plus running cost, we get about 30,000 BDT per month. So that's 90,000 BDT. If we do the math, that's about 110,000 taka or $1,400 net profit in 3 months for 8 tons of carrot, which is a lot for a smallholder farmer in Bangladesh. I'm going to move on to the next technology, the last one, which is the floating gardens. And this is a new technology that was developed by mainly Michael Reed, and it was based in a traditional floating garden design that's been used in Bangladesh for centuries. As you can see in the lower picture in Bangladesh, people pile water hyacinths and plant leafy greens on that in big river banks or in big lakes. However, there's problems with that. Since smallholder aquacultures in Bangladesh have no sunny space or for production of vegetables and fruit, they end up eating very little fresh produce. Also, if they add these rotting hyacinths in their fish ponds, it ends up removing oxygen from the pond, killing the fish. So we came up with the idea of creating a floating bamboo structure moored in the middle of the pond, which is filled with a medium that is soilless and doesn't decompose, so it doesn't remove any oxygen from the water. We did experiments that showed that plants can grow rapidly and can even can provide additional nutrients for the family that owns the garden and also a potential source of income. So here's a rundown of the basic materials and the cost estimate. We're using bamboo for the raft and the fence, vermicompost as a soilless medium with coconut coir to keep it light, fishnet to make sure the medium doesn't leach in the water, ropes, nails, and empty second-hand containers to float it. So if we pay for labor, this comes to about $92 per floating garden, or if we don't pay for labor, that's about $67. Here is a design of how a floating garden looks. Imagine this raft is built by bamboo, and that's a soilless medium, and these are second-hand containers that are used to float the garden. The bottom of the garden is touching the water, like an inch submerged, and water moves through capillarity up to the roots, so there's no need for watering. Here's another design with plants growing on it. And our gardens are 1.5 by 3 meters long, or 5 by 10 feet. And I'm going to show you pictures of the construction phase here. Here's how we build the raft with thick bamboo poles. We use bamboo to make the basket, and then we line it with blue fishnet. We're using second-hand plastic containers to float it, and then we put it in the pond. We use a coconut coir mixed with vermicompost to grow to make the soil as growing medium. We plant the seeds, and then we water it, and we tend it to the middle of the pond. As you can see here, the gardens, the plants grow pretty well. We can also use pest exclusion nets to make sure that we don't have to use any chemicals. And then farmers usually, they do that often. They get in the water, and they harvest their garden. They prefer that than tending it out. I don't know why. Well, you can see here a picture of a family with the vegetables they grew, I think, in a month period, in their floating garden. Some of the advantages of the floating garden, it's pretty small in size so that it can be tended from both sides outside. You don't have to step on the garden to harvest it. You can densely plant all your products, and spacing is only needed to accommodate plant growth and sunlight access. You don't need to water, as I said. Water moves by capillarity from the pond water up to the root. The plants are protected from animals since it's in the middle of the pond and they cannot reach it. Also, gardens can be productive even during the rainy season since the other gardens are usually waterlogged and you need another month after the rain stopped for the water to drain. So you have an early start when you plant in floating gardens. With that, wrapping up this talk, I talked about our three technologies that are being tested currently, and we have another year and a half for this project, the UC Davis chimney dryer, the Coolbot cold room, and the floating gardens. We have two local universities in Bangladesh doing work on these technologies, Bangladesh Aquaculture University and Fatwakali Science and Technology University. And with that, I'd like to ask you to go online and register to our newsletter at horticulture.ucdavis.edu or visit us at our booth, which is at the poster session on the left as you enter the room. I don't know if I have any time for questions, but I'll be happy to take questions. All right, good. Any questions? Yes. It's going to be longer. Oh, yeah, sorry. The question was about the drying in Bangladesh versus Davis and how much longer will it take. We We're doing some work. We haven't published any of the data, but we'll have data to show. It takes longer, much longer, because it's too humid over there. Yeah, please. The price of the CoolBot device is about $300.
Yes, please. I had a question about the floating raft. In our aquaponics system, we find that potassium is often a limiting nutrient. I didn't hear you talk about nutrients, but is anything limiting? Do you have to add any other nutrients to the floating raft?
The question was about the limiting nutrient in floating gardens. No, we're using vermicompost, and we haven't used any chemical fertilizer whatsoever, and it works fine. We found out that actually the ponds that are heavily fertilized for fish do better than the other ones because the water has nutrients already from the water, from the fertilizer they use. Yes. So the question was about the water quality and how we monitor it. We're partnering with Bill Daniels, who works for Auburn University, sorry, and he's been there a couple of times with his colleagues, and he's done water tests, and it's fine. There's no problem whatsoever. Yes. Right. We found out that the question was about rats swimming and getting on the garden. It happened to a couple of our locations. I think we moved the garden from one pond to the other, and it didn't happen again. Weird. But yeah, I think the rats are able to go through the net if they want to. They can chew on it and just, yes. Can you repeat the question? The percent of dryness that we achieve in Bangladesh, that's a good question. I mean, it depends on the product that you're drying. If you're drying fruit, you don't want it to be too dry because then it's not pliable. It's not eatable anymore. It all depends. I mean, you can definitely get good drying even for grains, and we've used it for rice and rice cake in Bangladesh, and it dries better compared to traditional drying, but I can't give you a number right now. Sorry. Yes, please. Sorry, what was that? Oh, sorry. The question is about seeds, yes. We've used it for rice and maize, corn, but not for... What do you mean, seeds like that I used to? On this project, we haven't dried any seeds. Can you remember, Beth, if we've had any? Too high. Yeah, I think it would destroy the germination rate. It would. Yeah, so we don't use it for seed that's used for planting. The temperature, the question is about the temperature of the chimney dryer. It all depends. It depends on how hot you want it to get. There's ways that you can open the side of the dryer if it gets too high, and this allows for more air to go through from the atmosphere, and it can make sure that the temperature doesn't go too high. But you can get up to 130 degrees Fahrenheit easily in California. But usually you don't want it very hot because it can burn the product. No, there's no fan. Yeah. Right. Yes.
So I don't know how visible it will be because they are mainly paddy growing, they need a lot of area.
Right. This one of the limitations, the question was about the size of the dryer. One of the limitations is the size. you can only make it so large. We're working now trying to extend the bed size and make it wider and longer. And in Davis, we'll have some experiments going on in the fall about that. Right. Yes, that's a very good question. It was about partnering for the drying technologies and a manual. So we are almost done with our chimney dryer manual, and we have a draft version at our booth. And if you sign up for our newsletter at the website, you'll get the last version of it when it's finalized pretty soon. But stop by our booth, and we'll show it to you. Thank you.
Please join me.
Thank you. Thank you.